Hello, welcome to another episode of The Heart Chamber. I am your host, Boots Knighton, and today, and at the end of every month, I am now going to be bringing you news that caught my eye in the heart health world. So let's get right to it. Welcome to The Heart Chamber, hope, inspiration, and healing. Conversations on open heart surgery. I am your host, Boots Knighton. If you are a heart patient, a caregiver, a healthcare provider, a healer, or are just looking for open-hearted living, this podcast is for you. To make sure you are in rhythm with the Heart Chamber, be sure to subscribe or follow wherever you are listening to this episode. While you are listening today, think of someone who may appreciate this information. The number one way people learn about a podcast is through a friend. Don't you want to be the reason someone you know gained this heartfelt information? And if you haven't already, follow me on Instagram, two different places, at boots.knighton or at the Heart Chamber Podcast. You can also find me on LinkedIn as well as Facebook. But enough with the directions. Without further delay, let's get to this week's episode. Now, all the articles that I found or caught my attention this month, I will be hyperlinking in the show notes for your reference. So this first one really caught my eye because I am 46 years old and I have quite a few friends now who are either in perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopausal. So I found this first article particularly important, and it's from Times of India. It highlights a study that was presented at the American College of Cardiology's annual scientific session. And so I know this has already been covered in several other news outlets, but this article happened to come into my email. And so basically, the gist of the study is that women, postmenopausal women, have a higher increase or higher incidence or risk of heart attack or other cardiac issues because the decline of estrogen in postmenopause contributes significantly to altering fat storage, blood clotting, and calcium buildup in the blood vessels. And so this is extremely concerning for women. Now, I do want to say that this study only had a sample size of 579 women, which is like a drop in the ocean as far as the amount of women available for a sample size. But it is interesting to see that even with this sample size, they noticed a large increase in women whose cardiac calcium score in a cardiac MRI, it went up significantly. And so be thinking about maintaining a heart-healthy diet, getting your regular exercise, obviously stop smoking if you haven't, and then stress management through activities like yoga and meditation. They all play a major role in reducing heart disease risk. The next article really caught my eye. This one only supported my strong belief that my community and my husband and my family were so instrumental in me recovering well from heart surgery, as well as I recently broke my leg 5 months ago. And my surgeon continues to say that I am healing the fastest he's ever seen anyone heal. And one of the contributors to that is my incredible support network. This article also supports my decision to start this podcast because I know that I am so lucky to have what I have and I want to give it away. And one of the purposes of this podcast is to provide you community, which I will be talking more about that soon, about how I want to start a community around this podcast. But I also want to be that voice for you as from one heart patient to another, to provide you that sense that you're not alone and that we're all in this together and that you don't have to go through a cardiac event alone. So this article is out of the Mayo Clinic. They used artificial intelligence to show that social isolation impacts cardiovascular age and mortality rate. Really fascinating article. Again, I'll have this highlighted or hyperlinked in the show notes, but they wanted the American Heart Association likes to use a social determinants of health screening, which addresses biological factors in patients. And so stress and physical activity are well recognized in that social determinants of health screening, but they wanted to see if there was need for more to be considered. So the Mayo Clinic wanted to start this investigation into the impact of social isolation on cardiac health, particularly the aging process. We're hearing a lot about the aging process, but I mean, everyone seems to have like these anti-aging this or reverse aging that, but the Mayo Clinic actually honed in on the cardiac aging process. So they explored the connection, they meaning the Mayo Clinic cardiovascular medicine researchers. So they explored the connection between social isolation and biological aging using artificial intelligence enabled electrocardiography. Now that is a mouthful. They also evaluated the association of social isolation with all-cause mortality. And then that provided the cardiac age estimate based on the electrocardiogram record. Now, their sample size was much, much larger than the previous study I mentioned in this episode. So this sample size looked at 280,000 adults who received outpatient care at the Mayo Clinic between June of 2019 and March 2022. This large group had 50.9% women, and it's also notable that 86.3% of the study was considered non-Hispanic white. So even though it was a large sample size, and it was basically even men versus women, we're still not fully there for a sample size. I'd like to see more diversity, but at least it's a larger sample size. So they performed a social isolation assessment, and then the participants, you know, answered all the questions, and then they had a 12-lead ECG within 1 year of completing the questionnaire. And a higher social network index score showed a stronger social network. And here's where it gets really interesting. The results found slower cardiac aging in patients with a higher social network index score. In more socially isolated patients, the heart age estimation was higher than the calendar age, with more than 2 years of deviation. So here's a quote from the study. Our analysis showed that the observed association is independent of a patient's biological condition, such as pre-existing cardiovascular disease. We also found that highly isolated patients have a nearly 47% higher risk of death compared with those who are socially engaged. That is so concerning to me as a heart patient, when I'm not recording and I'm just thinking about this podcast and when I'm thinking about my role in the world, the first thing that I always think about when I'm checking my intentions of doing this podcast, I'm working on a book for heart patients right now. My biggest driver is I think of the heart patients who don't have a network or who maybe live in a really rural part of the world or just struggle with mental health, because mental health does go along with cardiac issues. I mean, it's tough. The main point of my podcast and putting myself out in the world is I want to be that fellow heart patient in your life who provides you support. And so reading this article, it just emphasized my reasons and quickened my pace to finish my book and get it into your hands. And I have this saying that I keep thinking in my mind, which is, I don't want any heart patient to feel alone. And I want to start a movement of no heart unhugged. And so this article supports my purpose. Okay, moving on to the next one. This one was really interesting. This article is from Israel21c.org. Okay, and the title of this article, Research Uncovers Hidden Link Between Heart Attacks and Cancer. What the heck? Now, a lot of us have likely had a heart attack, or we have had heart attack symptoms. I had an in-STEMI heart attack just in December after I broke my leg. My heart just couldn't handle the stress. It was really, really minor. So I'm hoping that I didn't create little bubbles. What I mean by little bubbles? Well, researchers in Israel say they've now understand why patients who have suffered a heart attack are more likely to develop cancer. Well, crap. I tell you, this life of ours, we are really delicate meat suits. That's what I thought when I read this article. So the researchers from Tel Aviv University believe that tiny bubbles released by the recovering heart actually promote the growth of cancer cells throughout the body. So they tested their theory on animals, and they found that using drugs to inhibit the release of these bubbles, which they call small extracellular vesicles, or SEVs, slowed the growth of cancerous cells. My goodness. So a medical and research student working on the project said that the heart releases more of these tiny bubbles than usual into the bloodstream after an attack. So they move through the cardiovascular system and eventually reach the tumor or precancerous cell tissue, where they directly promote the growth of certain tumors. So I interpret that as like we all have tumors or precancerous tissue growing in our bodies. But that's what, you know, apoptosis is for. We do have mechanisms in our body that help kill tumors that aren't supposed to be in our bodies. And so that usually happens at night. It's a whole physiological process that's really cool and interesting. But it sounds like these little tiny bubbles can get to these tissues that aren't healthy for us and actually activate them. So, following an injury, I'm quoting now from the study, following an injury in the heart muscle and the deterioration to heart failure, these tiny bubbles contain growth factors and small nucleic acid molecules that promote cell division. Oh man. So we just need to be mindful of that. I mean, I try not to get fearful when I read articles like this. It just only emphasizes the importance of taking care of ourselves, eating well, getting exercise, obviously don't smoke, do all the things you can to care for your body. And hopefully that this doesn't come to fruition. And knowledge is power. You don't have to be a victim to your genetics. You don't have to be a victim to what happens to you. You are in the driver's seat of your health. But hey, now you know, and it's also just a super interesting study. All right, next up, a hospital in Florida, the HCA Florida Blake Hospital, performed its first transcatheter edge-to-air repair on a patient with mitral valve regurgitation. That is amazing. I've actually interviewed mitral valve open heart surgery patients on this podcast, and I know particular my friend Bill Wingate would be very happy to hear that they are now making advancements where you don't necessarily have to have open heart surgery to have a mitral valve regurgitation repair. This is huge. I want to give a big clap to the Florida Blake Hospital for this. This next article is on fasting glucose and its effects on silent myocardial infarction. Sample size, 3,075 men and women aged between 70 and 79 years old at baseline. 45% are women. 33% of the men as identified as African American. All participants were randomly recruited as a sample of Medicare beneficiaries from two clinical centers in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and Memphis, Tennessee. This data was from the first four annual visits from 1997 to 2001. And they used an ECG examination as a baseline in the beginning and at the end. So they looked at, was fasting glucose affecting the heart? And they found that the higher the fasting glucose, the greater the silent myocardial infarction risk. This article is worth reading. Again, I'll have this hyperlinked in the show notes, but it just goes to show how important our fasting glucose is, our cholesterol, all these different things do affect the heart. I'll even go as far as saying different types of inflammation also affect the heart. This article is a little complicated and nuanced. It's definitely higher level reading, but I bring this to you today just to be mindful of watching your blood draws. Make sure that when you do have a blood draw, that you don't just take your doctor's word for it. I want you to get into the driver's seat of your healthcare, and I want you to go to your portal, and I want you to look at all these different values, including your fasting glucose, because if you're bumping up at the top of normal, and if your doctor is just like quickly looking at your blood results and just see normal, 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 but you're like bumping at the top of this fasting glucose, that's when you need to do something about it. And you have to be your own advocate. And when I read this study, I thought to myself, this is really important. We can determine the outcome and the impacts on our health. So make sure you go and read this study. The next article that really just gave me so much hope, and I want to end with this. And you might, if you watch ABC News, you might have seen this on the news. A four-year-old in Texas at the Texas Children's Hospital received a new heart after waiting for 1,025 days. That is incredible. I want to get she and her family on this podcast. Now, I hope I am saying her name right. Her name is Arctura Nowak. And Arctura and your family, I'm sorry if I'm not pronouncing your name correctly. But she received a donor heart on March 29th. The month of April is Donate a Life Month, or Donor Month, Donor Awareness Month, however way you want to say it. And I just love that she got her new heart on March 29th and then got to go home during the month of April after waiting for so long. And I love this quote from her. She says, "I like my new heart." And she says she looks forward to seeing the ducks and the turtles at the local park. That is incredible. So Arctura, I want to give you a big congratulations. You are adorable. Your future is so bright. Your parents are so strong. And I'm clapping for you. I am clapping for the Texas Children's Hospital. We need more stories like this. And it is really incredible to see how the impact of being a donor can have on another person's life. And so in closing today, I want to remind you that we do have a choice in how we serve others even after we die. And if you're able, if you feel comfortable, please sign up to be a donor. Make it known to your family that you want to be a donor, because you never know who you can help next, even once you die. So that was my news brief. I will be doing this every month. I want to hear from you. Was this helpful? Do you not want to hear this? Don't hold back. My podcast is not for me. It's for you, heart patients and caregivers and medical teams. We are all in this together. Please email me, boots@theheartchamberpodcast.com, and let me know what you want to hear more of, what you want to hear less of. And I also just want to know how you're doing. Is this helping you? Please don't hold back. I love hearing from listeners. And if you have questions you want me to answer, or if you want me to have a specific guest on, I want to hear that too. So from my remodeled heart to yours, I love you. I'll be back next week. Thank you for sharing a few heartbeats of your day with me today. Please be sure to follow or subscribe to this podcast wherever you are listening. Share with a friend who will value what we discussed. Go to either Apple Podcasts and write us a review, or mark those stars on Spotify. I read these, and your feedback is so encouraging, and it also helps others find this podcast. Also, please feel free to drop me a note at boots@theheartchamberpodcast.com. I truly want to know how you're doing, and if this podcast has been a source of hope, inspiration, and healing for you. Again, I am your host, Boots Knighton, and thanks for listening. Be sure to tune in next Tuesday for another episode of The Heart Chamber.